Rosoro is still the king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it an excellent defender of grain quality and yield, and the enemy of both head and leaf diseases. When your goal is better grain quality and even higher yields, use Prosoro fungicide at its recommended high rate of 8.2 fluid ounces per acre, and the crown of higher profit could be yours. Learn more at Prosoro.us. Check with your state pesticide regulatory agency for specific restrictions in your state. Always read and follow pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. It's Farm Talk. I'm Mick Kerr in the North Dakota Corn Council studio. Let's head down to South Dakota, where issues are, well, let's find out what they are. South Dakota State University Extension plant pathologist out there in the, and he's been on the road much of the week, back in the office today, Emmanuel Biamakama. Good to talk to you again.
It's good to talk to you too, Mick.
Thank you. So, what kind of issues are you seeing, and what do you want farmers to hear about and think about here as we move forward into the month of May?
Right. So, we had an extensive survey of winter wheat across the state. Saw a lot of planters rowing in the fields. So, the season is too early to see issues. Perhaps the main concern now is moisture. You know, we saw a lot of wheat that is under moisture stress, and add on that some cooler temperatures. So it's a little early for the big issues we usually worry about in plant diseases, but nevertheless, we've seen a few issues just about to start. The main one being the wheat streak mosaic virus. This is a viral disease that is transmitted by wheat cow mites, and we saw this in a few fields in the central part of South Dakota, and mainly this is where volunteer wheat would not have been destroyed early enough, and so my wheat cow mites moved over to emerging winter wheat. But again, this is just a few fields, and also the incidence wasn't high, so maybe an indicator that going forward with heat coming through as temperatures warm up, we might see a few more issues around viral diseases in winter wheat.
Okay, but this is an example, or is this an example of the age-old acronym that pathologists have been preaching, destroy the green bridge, or don't let that green bridge happen from the time you, in like September, October?
Absolutely. That is the case. In these fields where we found wheat streak mosaic virus, you could see clearly that the inoculum came from the edges of the field, which means that the volunteer wheat was not destroyed in time. So, yeah, the green bridge is the main problem. And so the only way we can control or manage wheat streak mosaic virus is to make sure we destroy that green bridge and the mites will not survive to move to emerging winter wheat. So we need at least 2 weeks when this volunteer wheat needs to be dead so that, you know, mites won't survive and then move over to a new crop.
Yeah, I know if there ain't no food around, I ain't hanging around very long, so.
Right.
Okay. Is the extreme temperatures you mentioned, the up and down, and these extremely cold mornings and some very warm days we've had, is that causing any stress on especially the wheat crop, the small grains that have emerged? Is that doing any, well, setting the stage for some disease either now or later?
So definitely the current weather conditions are not favoring good crop growth, and so most of the fields we looked at for small grains are really behind. And we can also see some injury, especially, you know, the top leaves have been, you know, burnt out because of the frost injury. And so this has held back the crop. However, in terms of, you know, setting up for disease development, we really don't think that there should be an issue in terms of diseases that may develop, let alone in the season, because the pathogens that cause these diseases actually prefer slightly warmer temperatures. So that's why we are not seeing tan spot develop at this time or any powdery mildew yet. And so it's because these temperatures are not favorable for diseases to develop at this point. However, you know, to your point, when the crop is set back and when the crop is not growing as it should, it could become more vulnerable to diseases developing later in the season. because, you know, it's going to have some catch-up to do. Whereas, you know, under normal conditions, when you already have good growth and good progress of the crop, even when the disease starts to show up, by the time you have really severe symptoms, you know, the crop has advanced. So, yeah, the holding back of the crop could perhaps, you know, maybe help the pathogen to catch up with the plant.
Okay. All right. So is that, at this point, your complete analysis on wheat, or is there anything else in the small grains?
I believe that's what all we are seeing. The other thing perhaps to mention is that we've had reports of stripe rust developing in the states south of us. And so we need to keep an eye on the crop for this pathogen. You know, the stripe rust does not survive in South Dakota. It survives further south in where, you know, the temperatures are much warmer. But we've had reports of this rust coming through now in Kansas. We haven't had any reports in Nebraska, but especially that our winter wheat is a little bit behind. Again, we may have inoculum coming in when we just have that growth starting to happen. So something to keep an eye on and to scout the crop often. And as soon as we find that we have stripe rust, we need to plan for our fungicide application.
Okay, thank you. One of the reasons it's been so cold lately is the predominant direction of the wind has been out of the north, but that pendulum, I'm sure, will swing, and as we warm up, the more prevalent direction will be out of the south, and so here comes those
right.
Spores.
Yes, yep, need to keep an eye on the crop.
Okay, all right, well, so that's it for small grains. How about corn? I mean, Goss's wilt, is this going to be a year for Goss's wilt, do you think?
So it's really hard to predict if Goss's wilt will be an issue, because Goss's wilt, you know, the risk factors include if you're planting a susceptible hybrid, if you're planting corn on corn, if you have irrigated corn. But then sometimes also it's driven by, you know, storms. So where we have high winds and sandblasting and some injury of some sort to susceptible hybrid, you know, that can increase the prevalence of Goss's wilt. So it's hard to predict, but, you know, the best way to control Goss's wilt is to use a resistant hybrid, and we do have hybrids that are resistant to this bacteria. So one of the things that we kind of look at this time of the year when corn is going to the ground is to make sure that we alert our producers to do scouting when corn is establishing, so we can know, you know, if we have issues of root rots or things that may affect, you know, plant emergence and plant establishment. And that would help us in the next time we're planting, either to think of a seed treatment or hybrid selection to make sure that, you know, issues that arise when the plant is starting to emerge are addressed in the future seasons.
Gotcha. All right. How about for soybeans? Anything to get farmers up to speed on in soybeans?
Yes, so in soybeans, the two diseases that we worry about at the time of planting include the soybean cyst nematode and also the row rots, just as we mentioned in corn. So for the soybean cyst nematode, again, you know, the best way to manage this for SCN is before planting. So that is the variety that you're planting, it should be resistant to soybean cyst nematode, as well as if you're thinking of using a nematicide seed treatment. So those are the two ways we can manage SCN before planting. But then in season, we want to make sure we scout, we pick soil and test for SCN. So if we know we have SCN, then we can make management practices such as, you know, selecting that variety that is resistant or planning nematicide seed treatment. But that starts with knowing the status of SCN in the field. So even when SCN has been tested for in the past, it's really important to do it again periodically because, you know, we have soil erosion brought in by rain or wind, you know, where we can get nematodes moved around. You know, in the past few years, 2019, we had a lot of flooding, so a lot of soil movement happened. So it would be good to periodically test the soil. If you've had SCN in the past, then you can know if numbers have changed, if they have gone down or gone up. If the numbers have increased from the past, that means you need to change ways of managing SCN. If you've been using a resistant variety, perhaps we need to think of rotating within sources of resistance. If you've been using a nematicide seed treatment, perhaps you need to think of switching. And we have had a few nematicides come to market. So important to monitor SCN. Another root rot problem that we need to think of is Phytophthora root rot. You know, this can be common, especially where we have low spot areas, some compaction issues, or where we have heavy clay soils. Those tend to have more Phytophthora root rot. So Phytophthora is also managed using resistance and seed treatments. And there are special active ingredients that are good for Phytophthora management. So those include mefenoxam. We have also two other active ingredients that have come to market for Phytophthora and Pythium management. So those are a few diseases to think of in soybean, especially at the time of planting, that, you know, can affect plant stand establishment.
You've covered the big three. Thank you very much, Dr. Emmanuel Biamukama, South Dakota State University Extension plant pathologist. Hey, appreciate your great insight, and hey, we'll be checking in with you now and then during the growing season.
Well, thanks, Nick, for having me on. Appreciate it.
You are very welcome.